This show is a Hopful Media podcast production.
Just got a free coffee with my EarnaFi points.
Your what?
The points I get with the new EarnaFi app from BP and Amoco. I got 250 for signing up and more every time I fill up or buy anything in the C-store.
Oh, can you use points for fuel?
Of course.
And discounts and deals?
On anything.
Oh, like chips?
Mm-hmm.
Sodas?
You got it.
The actual slushy machine.
Only what's actually for sale. But you do get double the points for the first 90 days. Just go to EarnifyRewards.com to download the app.
Available at participating locations only. App content is subject to change.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the History of Persia. I'm Trevor Cully, and this is episode 132, Mystery Cults. I do want to apologize for late release coupled with a really short episode. There has been some construction in my new apartment building, and I didn't hear it through the headphones when I was recording, but it was in the final product. But I do want to assure you that it does at least balance out with a short extra episode that's going to be in the main feed at the end of this series, Between Kings. Speaking of being Between Kings, I don't know about all of you, but the last few episodes have me completely exhausted. 6 straight installments of Macedonian civil wars that only get more jumbled and chaotic as they go, with not nearly enough detail about any one battle to make any of them all that interesting. Unfortunately, I can't say that we're going to get back to having natural breaks in the action anytime soon. Even though there's only one more numbered War of the Diadochoi left on the docket, it just leads into more fighting over dominance of the Aegean between all of the usual suspects. So, thank God we've killed off a few kings, right? Because that means I have an excuse to squeeze in some religion and meet the neighbors content. In honor of our dearly departed Alexander IV and Philip III, we are going to talk about one of the most infamous and intriguing bits of ancient Greek religion today, the mystery cults. The next couple of religion episodes, as they trickle out, are actually building to something that I think you'll all enjoy quite a lot, but for now, I want to lay some groundwork and explain a bit about the sacred mysteries of ancient Greece. To start, if you've dug beyond the surface level of ancient history in the Mediterranean, you've probably encountered the idea of a mystery cult. But a lot of people seem very unclear on what exactly that means. I suspect this is partly a byproduct of classicists discussing religion in the Roman Empire and suggesting that various ancient mysteries were competitors to Christianity. This is sort of true and sort of not. If you check the date on the recent episodes, you'll notice that we are still about 400 years early for any detailed discussion of early Christians. But in short, Christianity did borrow and co-develop some of the same patterns as pagan mysteries early on, in part just because both of them were underground, although for different reasons. Christianity was banned in the Roman Empire, and being secretive was kind of the whole point of the mysteries. Some of the mystery cults did have similarly large followings to Christianity. However, the mysteries were still fundamentally part of the wider polytheistic Greek and Roman religious tradition. They weren't competing faiths, they weren't exclusive from things like general worship of Zeus or Jupiter and Juno and Minerva and everybody else, or from the imperial cult. They were cults within the larger religious milieu of the ancient world. So let's address that word, cult. I'm sure this is like the fifth time I've gone over this in the podcast, but it's really important, so hear me out. When discussing ancient religion, cult does not mean a shady, abusive, New Age religious movement. In the ancient sense, cult just means a dedicated following to a particular god within the pantheon, or even to a particular set of rites. There were major state-sponsored cults, small local cults, formal and informal associated with specific temples. The mystery cults were just one variant of this theme. The modern English word mystery actually traces its roots back to the same concept. In ancient Greek, mysterion meant secret or revealed knowledge. The mystery cults were a bit like modern secret societies and fraternal orders, such as the Freemasons. Their existence wasn't a secret to the public, and some of their general beliefs would have been well known and obvious just based on whichever gods or temples they happened to associate with. However, their exact practices, rituals, and flavor of mythology were closely guarded secrets. Some of them were effectively secret rituals in line with otherwise mainstream public religion. Others developed such a thoroughly different set of beliefs and practices that they can effectively be seen as separate parallel religions, acknowledging many of the same gods and stories in radically different contexts from the state-sponsored variant. And the number of cults with their own specialized mysteria absolutely exploded during the Hellenistic period. For our purposes on the history of Persia, most of them are just neat. Some are useful examples of cultural trends and forces, others will be directly relevant. However, we are still in the early stages of the Hellenistic Age, and many of those cults don't even exist yet. One that does, and the one that most heavily influenced all of the others, is the Eleusinian Mysteries. Many other mystery cults were both very small and very secretive, and most of them relatively short-lived. Taken together, all of that means that there's not much surviving information. The Eleusinian Mysteries are kind of an exception to prove the rule. They were the largest, most prestigious, and most well-known mystery cult in classical Greece, and are comparatively well-documented as a result, though if you look at the timestamp, you can see how little that actually means. Eleusis was a small city, effectively a suburb of Athens, and home to a major shrine dedicated to the goddess Demeter, patron deity of agriculture, a bit of a Mother Earth figure, and mother to Persephone. Between the two of them and the underworld god Hades, their mythology dictated the change of the seasons. According to that mythos, Hades lusted after Persephone and abducted her, tricking the young goddess into eating food grown in the underworld, and thus binding her forever to the afterlife. While her daughter was held captive, Demeter refused to allow any plants to grow and scoured the earth in search of Persephone, until finally convincing Zeus, their divine lightning-throwing king, also Demeter's brother and occasional lover? Baby daddy? Baby daddy's probably most accurate. She convinced Zeus to arrange a compromise. Persephone would forever spend half of the year in the underworld, when her mother would allow plants to wither and die, creating autumn and winter. Then Persephone could return to the world of the living, and plants would bloom and thrive for spring and summer. By all indications, this is one of the oldest myths in Greek culture, possibly predating the Greek language's arrival in the peninsula altogether. The Telesterion, the temple of Demeter at Eleusis, appears to originate in the Middle Bronze Age, and very obscure early versions of the mythology, primarily preserved in artwork, seem to suggest that Poseidon, the god of the sea, played a much bigger role, possibly taking on aspects of both Hades and Zeus from the more popular version of the story, in this very early version of the cult. By the 5th century BCE, they were a thriving part of Greek culture, drawing pilgrims and initiates from across the Greek world. In the 4th century, the Athenian state absorbed the Eleusinian mysteries as an official part of the Athenian government, integrating one of the polis's archons into the priesthood on a permanent basis. Like many of the other mystery cults, the Eleusinian mysteries operated in a pyramid-style hierarchy, topped with a high priest and priestess, then four more priestly offices, crewed by a number of men and women alike. Beneath them were those who had attained contemplation within the cult. More on that in a moment. Then, those who had participated in the earliest steps of initiation at least once before, and were eligible for contemplation, before finally reaching the initiates down at the bottom of the stack, seeking entrance into the mysteries. Initiates would gather annually at Eleusis in late winter to be inducted into the lesser mysteries. Though still technically secret, and not to be shared with the uninitiated, these are also the practices that the cult was willing to put down in some level of inscription and artwork around the Telesterion. These rites invoked a number of other agricultural and underworld gods associated with Demeter and Hades, but it all focused on a sort of mortal reenactment of Persephone's cycle. The initiates would enter the temple precinct for a feast that involved chants of rain and conceive, before reciting the Homeric hymn to Demeter, and the whole assembly going silent as the priest cut into an ear of wheat. Each step of the initiation process was meant to recreate the descent of Persephone, Demeter's search for her daughter, and Persephone's ascent back from Hades. As the philosopher Plato described it, the goal was to achieve perfect enjoyment of spiritual good. Thus, they would attain a better position in the afterlife by attuning themselves with the cycle of death and rebirth. Newly initiated members of the mysteries then had to wait about 18 months before they could petition for further induction into the greater mysteries at Eleusis. In early autumn of each year, the already inducted and the prospective inductees would gather once again for a 9-day festival. On the first day, they gathered at Eleusis and actually marched into the city of Athens, to the Eleusinion, a sort of branch campus temple on the city Acropolis. The priests carried the sacred objects dedicated to Demeter through the city, and a day of feasting and animal sacrifice followed before prospective initiates would spend another day washing themselves in the sea at the nearby harbor of Phaleron. The third day activities on the coast may be a holdover from that very early era in the cult's history when Poseidon was more involved in their mythos. The fourth day was kind of a quirk in the calendar. At some point, the Eleusinian festival and the public festival of the healing god Asclepius started to overlap. So the Eleusinian cult followers just joined in on the overlapping holiday. The next morning, they all gathered at Athens' main cemetery, representing Persephone's place in the underworld, and began marching to Eleusis once again, this time representing Demeter's search across the world, as they shouted obscenities to commemorate the story of an old woman who made Demeter laugh at dirty jokes during her mourning. This hike out of Athens was followed by an all-night vigil, and in that time, none of the worshippers were allowed to eat or sleep. On day 6, you get to the part that some listeners may have heard about before. They consumed the Kukion. The Kukion was a sort of potion. According to the Iliad, it was made from a mixture of wine, barley, and goat cheese. The Odyssey's description adds pennyroyal flowers into the mix. At the end of the day, we don't really know what exactly the Kukion was, or if the extremely ancient descriptions of it were even accurate to its mixture in later centuries. What we do know is that its consumption was associated with visions and religious ecstasy as the practitioners entered the inner sanctuary of the Telesterion for secret rites involving a reenactment or celebration of Demeter and Persephone's story. The sacred objects that had been carried to and from Athens, and a series of undocumented invocations and hymns. Theories about the Kukion abound. One or more of the ingredients may have been a closely guarded secret, or described only in euphemism by the Homeric sources. It may be as simple as a large group of people that were exhausted from days of hiking and partying, almost a full day without food, and a full night without sleep, gathering together for the height of their religious year, have a tendency to get really worked up as soon as they consume anything, especially anything wine-based. One of the prevailing theories is that poorly stored barley grew ergot, a type of fungus that contains chemicals similar to LSD. In large quantities, ergot poisoning is fatal, but in small amounts, especially once you mix in some wine, it can produce psychedelic trips. Though those trips are also infamous for being bad among modern psychonauts. Regardless, a combination of accidental hallucinogens, drunkenness, exhaustion, and mild starvation leaves plenty of opportunity for intense religious experiences once the cult members were inside. This was followed by a day of closely guarded worship that we know almost nothing about. We know the Eleusinian mysteries emphasized finding revelation and comfort in life after death, but that is some really basic religion stuff. Who doesn't have some version of life after death? The word for full realization in the cult was contemplation, and most modern scholars think that this climactic night was a meditative session seeking personal attunement to the cycle of life and death represented by the cult's primary deities. That certainly aligns with Plato's description of perfect enjoyment of spiritual good. And he would know, given that the famous philosopher was in fact a member of the Eleusinian mysteries. That climax was followed by another all-night party and feast with sacrifices, dancing, drinking, and general good times that was partially open to the public. The eighth day released the built-up tension of the last week and sent the message of achieving contemplation in preparation for death, with a series of ceremonies honoring the past members of the cult. On day 9, everyone bid farewell and went home to await next year's festival. Bear in mind at this point that this is the cult we know the most about, and what we know really isn't much. There are plenty of academic debates about the exact meanings and phrases used at Eleusis and the accompanying mythology, But I won't get into those today, partly just because they're not relevant to this show. The Eleusinian Mysteries were a largely Western phenomenon that aligned closely with the most popular understanding of Greek mythology for centuries. This is actually the point where I had originally intended to switch to a discussion of another of the most influential mystery cults in antiquity, the Samothracian Mysteries, based on the island of Samothrace. Philip II and Macedon and Queen Olympias supposedly met for the first time while being inducted into the Samothracian cult. However, we know even less about that one. It was tangentially related to the fire and forge god Hephaestus, as well as a group of very obscure underworld gods associated with the islands of the Northern Cyclades. Beyond that, it would just sound like an even less detailed version of everything I just said. There was an induction process, an internal hierarchy, a sacred inner sanctuary, etc., etc. The Samothracian Mysteries were quite famous in their day, but they did a much better job of the whole mystery bit. So instead, the thing I most want to emphasize today is the structure and concept of a mystery cult in general. Many, many of the other mysteries were heavily influenced by Eleusis' popularity and mimicked its activities and structure. Secretive initiation rites, reenactments of mythology, attunement to the spiritual aspects of creation, life, and death, and closely guarded inner sanctuaries are all common aspects of the mystery cults writ large. Second, Eleusis in particular helps to illustrate just how popular these things were, and how non-competitive they would be with the more well-known state religion. The Eleusinian Mysteries were incorporated into the Athenian state at its peak following the Peloponnesian War, and the likes of Plato, our recurring source Plutarch, and literally Augustus Caesar, were all members, as were a few of Caesar's successors. The mystery cults were not seen in conflict with the wider religious world of antiquity, and the popular ones became quite influential and widespread. Over time, the mysteries of Eleusis actually did become increasingly influenced themselves by another mystery-based religious movement that took off in the Hellenistic Greek world, Orphism, which elevated the mythic poet Orpheus to the level of a prophet, in the biblical sense of revealing divine secrets. Orpheus, like Persephone, was one of the few beings in Greek mythology to travel to the underworld and return alive. So you can already see why the practitioners at Eleusis would have taken an interest. But Orphism, unlike the traditional practices of Eleusis and the various state cults, developed its own radically, radically different version of Greek mythology. That said, that's just a teaser for the next religious episode, which will come further down the line. You know, when I kill off a few more kings and ramp up to one of my personal favorite topics for another barrage of topical episodes. Instead, I'm cutting this one short and leaving it as a primer. Next time, our narrative will either resume or not, depending on how you want to look at it. We are now focused on the domains of a single ruler once again, Seleucus. But first, we ought to meet his neighbors, the Diadochoi. Until then. If you want more information about this podcast, you can go to historyofpersiapodcast.com. That's where you'll find things like maps, my bibliography, and the financial support page. If you just want to hear more of my voice, check out my other podcast, America Secret Wars. That's where I tell my guests about all of the forgotten and overlooked wars in American history. And if you want to support these projects or my work in general, you can head to hopfulmedia.com.co to donate, buy merchandise, or subscribe and get access to both shows with no ads, bonus episodes, Discord access, and more. No money, no problem. The absolute best way to support indie podcasts is to recommend the show to others and leave a review. Until next time, thank you all for listening to The History of Persia.
This October, Tanger invites you to shop pink and save lives. Your donation of $10 or more to the Breast Cancer Research Foundation helps fuel innovative research that brings us closer to a cure. It also unlocks exclusive savings from brands like Coach, Crocs, Columbia Factory Store, and more to shop all month long. Join us as we mark 30 years of advancing research and empowering hope. Donate and access your exclusive savings today at Tanger.com.